Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for the dawn of America of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
No commercials, no subscriptions, no network, no rules, and at the end of the day, my friends, no comparison. Banal America's Summer of Strangeness continues onward tonight with what may be a double guest. We know for sure we've got one guest on the line. A couple of weeks ago, we had Kiki Dombrowski on. We talked about this project, the Liminal Earth Project, which is a fantastic website, which you can find at liminal.earth, which always trips me out because I want to say liminalearth.com, but it's liminal.earth is the website. What it is like, I think it's through Google. It's like a Google Map thing where people report their paranormal experiences, and it gets put in on this map, and you can explore where you live and as well as all other places around the country, if not the world. We'll find out about all that tonight. I assume the world's liminal.earth, right? So, we're going to learn about that here tonight. And so, as I said, we're supposed to have the two guys who run it on tonight. One of them, I don't know what happened to him. He'll have to file a report with liminal.earth after this show and explain how he got sucked into a black hole or something. But we do have one of the guys behind Liminal Earth on the line right now. So I believe I think I'm turning into an old man because like people tell me things and then this happened on the last time we did a double guest show. So I believe it's Garrett we have on the line, and Jeremy is the one we're waiting on. But I could have completely botched that. So we'll see. So welcome to the show, Garrett.
Actually, you are your botching prediction was unfortunately true. This is Jeremy.
All right. I'm sorry, brother. I should have figured that out, but you just told me who it was right at the start, and then I was all confused. So
that happens all the time. We're two white guys with beards from the Pacific Northwest. So
there you go. All right. So we've got Jeremy. That's good. So that's good. See, I will leave that in the show, and then people can see that I'm fallible, as if they didn't know that by now. All right. So we've got Jeremy Puma here. Hopefully Garrett will call in, or else he'll have a fantastic story for us sometime down the line about how he was abducted by
Absolutely.
Aliens.
I can tell you he's working on it right now. He's trying
Yeah. It's all good. It's all good. I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm not like this. This entire evening hinges on Garrett calling into the show, Jeremy. Don't you get it? So tell me, this is good because I always have a hard time bouncing between the guests at first. So give me a little bio background on Jeremy Puma. I can't imagine that's really your last name. It's not, right? Your last name really isn't Puma, is it?
As a matter of fact, it absolutely is. Yeah.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah. It's
absolutely wild.
It's a Sicilian name. My family is originally, their origin was in Sicily. And interestingly enough, it comes from an ancient word for apple, like apple farmer. Like think you like palm in French or like palm de terre is like earth apple, so that is that's sort of the origin of the name. So we figure we must have been apple farmers at some point.
Maybe a long time ago.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right. Now we got Garrett in here, so he's on the show. So the ship will
Garrett.
Yes, we'll sail smoothly here. So let's start since Jeremy got on first, he gets to go first. So let's start with the bio, the background on Jeremy Puma. You know, who are you and how did you wind up in this position here on this show?
Yeah, sure. So I was born and raised in Florida, in St. Augustine, Florida, which, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners will recognize the St. Augustine Lighthouse that every single ghost hunting group has been to dozens of times over the past decade. So my childhood was just a series of, you know, weird Florida experiences one after another. So from an early age, I've been into this sort of interested in the paranormal, the occult, the weirdness, strange things. And eventually, after I graduated from college, I decided I didn't want to live in Florida anymore and moved out here to Seattle. So I've been living here in Seattle since 1998. I've done a number of things. I do, you know, back in the old days of blogging, had a blog where we covered some of this stuff. That's one of the ways that Garrett and I met, actually, is we were both blogging about this stuff back in like 2003 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so we both realized, you know, we were like, oh, hey, you know, you live in Seattle. I said, Garrett, we should get together sometime, hang out, you know, grab a beer or a cup of coffee. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's cool. That sounds good. Where do you live? And so we discovered in that conversation that we literally lived across the street from one another.
Wow. That's wild.
Like the house across the street. We had never seen each other walking around the neighborhood or anything like that. But, you know, we lived right across the street. It was very strange.
That's wild. That's really weird.
Yeah.
And so then this was born. So we'll get into that in a minute. Now, Garrett, welcome to the show. I'm glad we could get things straightened out, buddy.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry about that.
My pleasure. Now let's let's get the bio background. So we know that Jeremy came from Florida. So we're going to hold that against him for the rest of the night. But what? No wonder you're in the strangeness, dude. That's like the land of strange. But what about you, Garrett? What's your bio background? How did you come to this situation here?
Well, I'm from California, the Bay Area, very small, kind of what I thought was a boring town. And then, you know, I think I'm kind of just like an amateur, like, you know, most people just interested in this stuff. But I was, as a kid, I was like very terrified of, all these kinds of, stories I'd heard. You know, my parents had those Time Life books with the creepy covers on them and communion laying around our house. And, so I was like very, scared about it. Even until like I was like in my 20s, and when I eventually moved up to Seattle, I was starting to like really delve into it. And I met Jeremy and some other people who were blogging, and we were all writing about this and reading Mothman prophecies. And it just kind of opened my world to it. I have a religious studies degree, so I have that kind of background, but. And I have also like a tech background. So that's kind of where some of, you know, I meet up with Jeremy on the stuff.
Yeah. All right. Now I'm looking at the picture on the website. I'm trying to decide which one of you is Jeremy and which one is Garrett. And
Garrett
I'm
probably
going to
be very, very flamboyant, probably.
I don't know. It's kind of like a nice looking coat. It's on your about page, so. And one of you is wearing sort of like a little Dutchman cap. So I'm gonna say, I'm gonna predict that I'm gonna go with how you listed it on the website, but you didn't actually like label who was who. So I'm guessing the little Dutch cap is Jeremy and Garrett is the guy the bigger of the two with the coat.
Yeah, we're a little bit like Laurel Hardy or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. Yeah, the way the picture. It's cool. I like it. It's a cool tandem, man.
Yeah.
So, what? Now I know this started out as Liminal Seattle. So, you know, I don't. If one of you sort of is the I mean, I wouldn't say the better, but whoever wants to take the lead on sort of telling us this, give me the elevator pitch, the thumbnail background. We know who you guys are now. What is this liminal.earth sort of I told people when we started the show, but this is your baby. So, I mean, tell us how this came about and what you're trying to do here with this project, because it's really awesome. I really like it a lot. As Kiki, we were talking about it on the show a few weeks ago, Kiki and I, Dombrowski, and she was saying, because I've been doing a lot of road trips this summer around New England, mostly Massachusetts, I rely a lot on Atlas Obscura for these sites to visit and shit. And she's like, yeah, Atlas Obscura is like the travel log, whatever you call it, the place to find out where to go. And then when you go, when something fucking weird happens, then you go to Liminal Earth to report it. It's kind of like, yeah, that's right. A great way of describing it. So I'll leave it up to you guys to figure out who kicks off this sort of background thing on the website. I don't know who would be best. So tell me about how this came about, how it grew out of Liminal Seattle, and what you're trying to accomplish here with this project.
Yeah,
Garrett,
sure.
We'll go with you.
I think Jeremy would do a good job.
Oh, okay. I can't get the voices yet, no. So just bear with me.
We'll tag team.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
So like I, you know, we were saying earlier, you know, Garrett and I met because we had been sort of blogging and talking about this stuff back since 2003. And, you know, even though we lived across the street from each other, we still primarily talked online. That's just sort of the way the world is. So we had just been continuing to talk about this stuff even after the blog scene died down, and we had kind of both moved into separate neighborhoods and, you know, both gotten married, but we continued this sort of ongoing conversation on email and on Slack. And then we have a third member who chooses to remain kind of in the background, our friend Tim, and he's been involved in this the whole time too, and he's currently living on a farm in Quebec.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he's kind of the quiet partner in this whole thing. But one day, I can't remember who it was, but we decided we wanted to we like to talk about our dreams, you know, and we decided we wanted to start a database of like recording dreams to see if there were any patterns, because you know we're friends, we have the same interests, we talk about stuff, you know, is it possible that we could find some correlations between dreams and what was happening to us all each at the time. And then I think it was, so we did that for a bit, and I can't remember who it was, but somebody said, well, we should do this for like some of the experiences that we've had locally. And so we created this database for that. And then Garrett and I kind of simultaneously both started thinking, well, let's make maps of this and see if we can actually put these experiences on a map of town. And we both started building separate maps independently of each other before we started talking about this with each other.
Wow, nice.
So, but Garrett is definitely the more of the two of us, and his ability to get that side of things together sort of was the right choice for us. And then one day, I can't remember, it was Garrett who said, you know what would be cool is if we open this up to like our friends and see if anybody else has, you know, anything like this. So he put it on Facebook. And it exploded. It just went everywhere.
Yeah.
Like the Seattle Times picked us up. We had a story in Vice come out. We had just all of a sudden this little silly side project we were doing just really took off. And about, I don't know, 8 months ago or so, maybe a little longer than that, we decided to open up to the whole planet. So now it's Liminal Earth instead of just Liminal Seattle.
All right. Yeah. Because I remember when you first launched this, I remember seeing articles about Liminal Seattle, and later I realized that this Liminal Earth grew out of that. But so I kind of remember the evolution of it and hearing a lot of buzz about what these guys in Seattle were doing. So I'm glad you scaled it up, as they say, in the industry or whatever it's called, and opened it up. So have you guys had your own personal experiences with the strange and unusual, leading up to all this? Garrett, I'm going to go with you first. I'm going with Garrett now. Let's see what Garrett has to offer.
It's on the map. There's one experience I had in Seattle. I was living at like a vegan, straight-edge punk house. And I was like making some, yeah, I know. I was making some scrambled tofu, and I, all of a sudden I saw on the side of my, the corner of my eye, someone looking at me, and I like turned my head, and I saw for just a brief second this person looking at me, and it freaked me out because I realized it looked like me, looking at myself, and looking confused, like why are you here, kind of, you know, that kind of view. It freaked me out.
Yeah.
I ran upstairs. I'm like kind of a chicken about all this stuff. I'm not afraid to admit it. But, my house had kind of experienced all kinds of different things, and that was my one, like, something I actually physically saw. Another thing that's interesting about it is that around the same time, a friend of mine found a letter in a mailbox. It's like a suitcase that is like...
Yeah.
A chair. It's like a weird art installation, but if you can open up the suitcase and there's stuff inside, like people leave shampoo or weird things in there. But so he found this letter that said, thank you for believing in time travel. Please write back, Jared. And it kind of kicked off this whole thing. I was like,
and that was the time travel mailbox.
Yeah. We call it the time travel mailbox. And we actually like 10 years later had a time travel party where we, invited time travelers from all timelines to come, and it all circulated around this one area where the suitcase is. I ended up having a business that was like right outside of that, where that suitcase is. It just happened. Like I didn't plan that. So it became like this nexus point or something. It's weird. And so I don't know, like, is that thing I saw of myself, did I time travel at some, or am I going to time travel and go back into that point when I'm living in that vegan house? I don't know. It's just kind of a weird experience. So that's on the map. I think Jeremy has some spots too as well.
Yeah, Jeremy, what did you go outside or something, buddy? It sounds like you're making photocopies, to be honest. I don't know what's going on over there.
Really? No, that's weird. No, I needed to get some headphones. So I just went and got my headphones. That's all.
All right.
I can hear a little more clearly. So
I thought you were publishing a zine or something over there. We do that.
We have zines. You know, there are liminal earth zines available.
That's good. Zines are awesome. It sounds like they're making a comeback. So what's your experience? I'm intrigued by this time travel chair, but I don't know what to even say about it. So time travel mailbox. But what's your paranormal experiences, Jeremy?
Well, yeah, sure. So I've got a couple there. If you want to lead in with the – why don't we stick with the time travel, one of my experiences is in Central Florida when I was a kid. My family and I were going to an amusement park or something like that, and we were having breakfast at a Wendy's restaurant, like 8 in the morning or something like that. And then all of a sudden these two people came into the restaurant, and they were dressed in like 19th century garb. So, like, you know, the guy had, like, a riding crop, and the woman had, like, a hoop skirt. But they were really, like, dirty looking, like they had been traveling or something like that.
Yeah.
And then without a word, they walked over to the water fountain in the Wendy's and just started, like, inspecting it. Like, the guy, like, bent down and was, like, looking in the little vents on the side. They never pushed the button and got water out or anything like that. And they just did this for, like, a few minutes, just inspecting the water fountain. And then they just left the restaurant. And then we turned around and looked out the window, and you know, there was nobody there. Dun, dun, dun.
So it's like a time slip or something. Like they...
Yeah.
Yeah, like they came into an old saloon in their minds or something. And they were like, what the hell is this thing?
Extra weird too, because like, why the water fountain? Why, you know, they totally walked just right by the counter, where, you know, where, I don't know.
Yeah.
Strange experience. Yeah.
Very weird. So now let me ask you, there's different stuff listed on here. There's a map legend. Again, the website for folks listening is liminal.earth. Garrett, people in the chat room want to know, did anyone show up that they thought was a time traveler, or was it just people there to have
Well, there was, I mean, it's funny because it was kind of like a party. We had like bands playing and stuff.
Right, right.
But, and so I knew most of the people that were there, but there were a couple people there that I was like, those people I've never seen before, and they definitely look like wallflower time travelers. They looked out of time a little bit. I didn't want to, like, make a big deal out of it, but...
yeah.
Yeah, there's a couple people I had suspicions on, for sure. It was all based on that thing where Stephen Hawking had a time travel party. I don't know if you've ever heard about that.
No, I never heard of that. He had a party like that, too.
He had a time travel party, but then he sent out the invite, he announced it the day after, and he said that no one came, so obviously time travel doesn't exist or something. And I was like, well, maybe he just threw, like, a really crappy party, you know? Like, maybe that's why. So that's why we had, like, you know, we had bands and we had a whole shebang. And it was fun. It was really fun.
Yeah. See, yeah. He did it, not with all due respect to the late, great Stephen Hawking, he did a shitty job.
Right.
I never even
right.
I never even heard of this time travel party. So if I was a time traveler, I would still not even know that I was supposed to go. So
exactly.
I guess it wouldn't matter if I found out now I could still go. But still. You know,
that's technically true. You still have a chance.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, you gotta. I guess maybe it is a legendary. I had never heard of that story before, so I would not rely on Stephen Hawking to promote my band. So on the website, there's a list of stuff. You've got a map legend, and there's 11 or so. Things on here, so like dark forces, time distortions, mythologies. We may end up going through them all, but some of these I want to just ask. Like, did you kind of throw these out there as possibilities, or are these things that you've gotten over time? Because let's start with this. I want to know what a pre-shamanic deer cult is. So, what is a pre-shamanic deer cult?
You know, we've,
Jeremy, that's
we've,
all you
we've,
do.
We've been notoriously cagey about this in the past. So that's under the mythologies. So one of our big sort of missions with this map is to get people to re-mythologize their landscape, is what we say. So,
yeah.
You know, instead of, you know, because, well, you know, in Seattle in particular, we went through a very recent era where, like, Seattle was known as this sort of quirky, cool, sort of grunt, you know, the birthplace of grunge, and, you know, nobody ever came out here. But then all of a sudden Amazon happened and Microsoft happened. And so it just, started turning into this sort of sterile, corporate, like parts of it, I would say, like a hellscape.
Yeah.
You know, tech bros and stuff like that. And so we, when we started this project, we thought, well, you know, what is here that's cool? What can we do to encourage people to, like, find out more about the real stories that are happening here and, like, the real weird stuff? Like, it's not all just, like, tech bros and like, wealthy real estate agents. Like, there's, like, a giant pre-glacial boulder in, like, in one of our residential neighborhoods that people could check out. And, you know, so anyhow, this idea of remythologizing the landscape is sort of one of our foundational ideas. And so we put the mythologies category up there just to encourage people to think about that kind of thing. So
yeah.
That if they have an experience that seems, like, dare I say, you know, divine or something like that, that they would still feel encouraged to add that here.
Yeah, okay.
Now, the examples we give under each legend, so this is kind of a, you know, like I said, it exploded really fast. And so
yeah.
When we first started getting all the attention, we were like, shit, we have to come up with stuff. So the examples next to each legend are just the kind of things that we would, you know, accept in each category. They're not stuff that necessarily actually exists.
All right. So you're telling me that neither one of you has taken part in any fecal divination?
Not personally.
Okay.
I don't know. Garrett...
how about you? You doing any fecal divination over there?
No divination. But I have been to that Bigfoot Museum in Cherry Log, Georgia, and they have a 3-foot-long Sasquatch fecal.
Yeah, I love that place.
That's amazing. Oh, my
God.
Yeah,
I love that Bigfoot Museum. It's awesome. Yeah.
It's very good.
That's really a little treasure.
But no, I did not do any divination with it. No.
All right. All right. Well, I was eyeballing all these things. I was the other one that just pre-shamanic deer cults and fecal divination. I don't know what it says about me, but those were the two that jumped out at me. So how does this work exactly? Like, so somebody, somebody has an experience and then they go, we'll do the walkthrough. So I would do click here to add your story. So I'm going to think, okay, mm-hmm. Then I fill it out. And then where does this get sent off to? One of you guys? I know Kiki said she kind of manages Tennessee. Do you have sort of like local people who can kind of sift through this? How much stuff do you get? So there's a few questions for you, but how does it work? How's the process work to get something on the map, if you will?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know.
Who?
I shouldn't. If it gets quiet, I'll just throw someone's name out there. So it's like a bad game show. So whoever wants to go ahead. How's this work?
Okay, you do it.
Yeah, so someone just fills out the form. It's pretty basic questions about, like, where it happened, date, and, it only has to be a couple sentences or a paragraph. It doesn't have to be a long tale, although people do write really nice prose. It gets submitted to us. Jeremy and I can, like, we actually do read them and make sure that, you know, it fits in line with what we want on the map. And we very rarely reject things unless it's, like, obviously someone joking with us or...
Yeah.
Maybe appropriative. Yeah. Oh, yeah, they just taking from some plagiarizing. We don't want that.
Right.
You know, we really want it to be, like, a firsthand personal experience, like something that you actually encountered or...
Yeah.
Saw yourself. So when it gets up there, I'm trying to think of what else. Yeah, you were said.
I asked you if it gets sent to Kiki, like not just Kiki, but like have local people that sift through, or are they just like a street team that tries to get people in their local areas to submit stuff?
It's more like a street team, because really, I think the idea is that this stuff happens in every town. Every place has every town has these. Local legends or experiences or the creepy, you know, part of the forest or whatever. So we want all of that on the map. And Jeremy and I obviously can't go out and go to all these communities and ask for that. So we're really relying on, we have this ambassador program where people can just basically just hanging out with us in a Discord. And, like, you go out and you join your Facebook groups or whatever and just, like, ask for stories or do your own research to get more people to submit in your area and be kind of like the ambassador for your area to, like, grow what it looks like in your neighborhood. So that's kind of what that is all about. Like, because Jeremy and I can't physically do that. But,
they're our hype squad, kind of.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how many stories would you say you have on the map now, and how many are you getting in, like, you know, what's your, you get a lot in a day? Is it like you get a few every week, or what's the flow like? So what's the total and what's the flow? Those are the two questions there. Either one of you, who would know that?
It can really vary. It really depends, you know, because we get a big, after that, I think the article that was in Vice, which was by MJ Benias, who, great guy. He published that, and then I think that was the biggest influx we got all at once. On average, I'd say if we haven't just appeared on like an incredibly popular show like yours, then we'll probably get, you know, I'd say between 5 and 10 a week. If we do get, you know, I think that the interesting one of the interesting ones is, I guess we were featured on some UFO related YouTube podcast in Brazil.
Oh wow.
And the only reason we found out is because all of a sudden we started getting this glut of UFO reports in Portuguese from Brazil.
Oh God.
All at once. So they're like, where did you hear from the, you know, and then they listed this podcast. So, you know, I mean, it was cool. It was really cool. We added them, you know, why not? I think right now our total, it's kind of hard to tell because our mapping it's a WordPress plugin.
Yeah, yeah.
And the plugins, it's got a couple of little wonky issues that make it hard to actually count the total number. But I would venture to guess it's somewhere around 500 right now, plus or minus.
Yeah.
Which,
all right.
Is fantastic. Great. We want more than that, but that's really, we're happy with that number too.
Okay. Zach Copley. I love Zach Copley. He's a friend of mine. He's in the chat right now. He's got a question for you guys. He's got three questions. But he's a very easygoing guy. So these questions sound very like lawyerly or something. I don't know what he's getting at. So he wants to know. You'll understand when I get these questions out. He wants to know, is the underlying data publicly available, and can researchers get a copy to do analysis? And what's the license, if so? So I don't know necessarily what any of that means. So, but all the shit's out there for people to get on the website, right? I think that's the case, right?
Kind of. I mean, we do have a terms of service. It's kind of funny because, like, in my day job, I work in a university department that handles licensing. So I feel like I actually can answer this kind of question.
There you go.
Essentially, what we ask people to do when they submit is to basically grant us a royalty-free, non-exclusive license to their story. And what that means is that they maintain ownership of their story. They can still take it out and do whatever they want to with it. But we can use it, like, if we wanted. We had talked about maybe in the future, like, putting out a book that has some of the coolest entries in it. Or, doing our podcast et cetera. That way, we still have the rights to do that. And they can't, they can't turn around and say that because they've signed our terms of service. So, So as far as the data goes, I mean, at this point, there's not really a lot of raw data beyond, like, the dates, the location, and the experience. But
yeah, and the experience is like an essay, so it's hard to really parse through that necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's,
in the categories, I mean, we could probably break things down into, because there's, like, we could certainly UFO sightings in an area or cryptid sightings
Bigfoot
in an area,
etc.
Yeah, Bigfoot sightings in an area, But I'll let Garrett take over here because we have some potentially, hopefully, exciting changes to the map coming up soon, before the end of the year, maybe early next year, depending on, how horrifying 2020 continues to be. So, Garrett, maybe you could tell them a little bit about what we're thinking we'd like it to be soon.
Yeah, we're moving over to a different mapping software called Mapbox, and I wrote a back end for taking in all the data using, like, building out an API basically so that people can submit, and maybe we could even make, like, a phone app or something that talks to it, a mobile device app.
Yeah.
And also on the other end, maybe allowing people to, suck out or take out data that way, and query against it and do all kinds of things like that. And I think in general, in the future, it'd be really amazing to, like, add layers to this map. So you have these stories, the folklore stories that people are submitting, and changing it to, like, here's a location that has these events or these experiences that people have had in the same location. So kind of changing it to that a little bit more. But then also, like, we could suck in data from, like, all the coal mines in the country and cover that over the same map, and you could, like, look at experiences and see, coal mines or ley lines or or pull in data from other researchers who have big data sets. So I think that would be really fun to, like, pull in all that stuff and have, like, even more data to work with. Because right now, with 500 stories, we can't really make any, like, big, have any real analysis yet of, like, are there a lot of this kind of thing happening? But if we structure the data even better and make it easy to pull it in and out, then maybe we can. That'd be really fun.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now.
Oh, God. Oh, no, I was going to say, like, if we could correlate, like, the even so, the data that we could potentially bring in would be helpful for us even if we don't have the number of reports that we want. So if we only have 500 reports, that's great, but you can't really tell much with that. But if we had 500 reports plus a layer showing cave systems in the U.S., plus coal mines in the U.S., plus lightning strikes on top of that, plus, like,
yeah,
what kind of geographical features are in the area or what kind of geological features are in the area, you know, that would make those 500 reports, like, way more interesting and meaningful.
Well, what would be interesting, too, is to cross-reference it with some kind of, like, astronomical thing and find out, like, if it was a full moon or not. That would be an interesting, because a lot of people think, like, crazy stuff happens on a full moon. So that would be an interesting thing to look at once you can get your hands on the data and stuff, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you guys get asked. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, even if for some reason, like, you know, people always complain about Mercury being in retrograde, right?
I've seen those people.
Can we prove it? Like, more weird shit does happen when Mercury is in retrograde.
It would be interesting, yeah. Yeah, I don't even that. Yeah, it's like I don't know when that is. So it's like, to me, I always see people mention it, and it's like, don't mention it, dude. Now I know it's happening. if I didn't know, then it wouldn't influence me. Now, I'm sure you guys get asked all the time your favorite stories. I know you were just on Conspiranormal, so I don't want you to tell the same story you told there. So do you have any sort of, if you didn't tell your favorite on there, give me some of the stories that really stand out to you guys as you know, that were like, holy shit, this is amazing. You know, and then either one of you, whoever's chomping at the bit to tell a story, go ahead.
Yeah.
I think it's the Rupert story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally it. Yeah, we're both on the same page here. Because we haven't talked about that. So this one is a really cool one. This was in, let's see, where am I here? I'm just going to read the entry on the map, but I'm in Lucerne Valley in California. This is something that this person experienced in the first week of June of 2008. So he says, while driving through the desert with my grandmother, our AC went out in her 2001 Honda Passport. It was incredibly hot. I am from North Carolina and was in California for my cousin's high school graduation. In 2008, I was a high school junior. I had just returned from a fishing trip in Red Lake, Ontario, before heading out to California. While in Canada, I spent some time with some local indigenous folk. For 2 weeks, I drank a type of local root beer with them. It was the best I've ever had in my life. I consider myself a root beer connoisseur. With our AC broken and no beverages to quench our insatiable thirst, we decided to look for a gas station. Our GPS showed zero gas stations around. Suddenly, a building appeared before us. It was a small building with an old-timey gas pump out front. The building itself was made of stone, smoothed out by years of flash floods. Inside the building was a single beverage stall. Inside the stall was a selection of bottled waters and that indigenous Canadian root beer.
Whoa.
Needless to say, I was so... Nothing seemed off about the store clerk or anything. I just couldn't believe I found this special root beer in the desert of all places. We continued on and went to my cousin's graduation. Afterwards, I decided we would drive back using the same route so that I could buy all of the remaining root beer. I just had to bring that magical beverage back home to North Carolina with me. I drove up and down this rural desert road 3 times. The stone gas station wasn't there. I couldn't believe it. Maybe I had taken the wrong turn, I thought. No way. There was only one road. I have since been back to the area 3 times. I literally asked every local I ran into about it. I always received the same answer. There is no stone gas station.
Wow. That's pretty wild. That's very detailed.
Yeah.
That's what I like about that.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm really kind of wrapping my head around it. At first, I'm like, what the fuck is this guy going on about root beer for? But what a, yeah, that's one that makes you think, like, oh, why would anyone make up, you know, that's pretty wild.
Yeah, I really like the stories that seem like dreams. Like, that feels like something that you would have dreamt happened. And it's so personal, like the fact that he saw the root beer that or they saw the root beer that they personally, you know, enjoyed.
Yeah.
You know, it just reminds me like of the, you know, those details, like the aliens who give the little cookie or whatever. I can't remember the name of that. You know, like the pancake. It's just like
the Symington pancake.
Right.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem, you know, it's totally out of the ordinary. It doesn't fit the conventions or anything, and it seems very personal to that person. But yet I swear it happened. So I don't know. I just love that kind of thing. That even though it sounds so bizarre. I think another key thing is that Jeremy and I are not interested in debunking any of these stories or like trying to, you know, prove them right or wrong. We just want people to be able to feel free to share them. And we're not going to, you know, laugh at people or something, you know,
tell them,
oh, that was just the wind or something. We really want people to feel free to share whatever they got. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's not like a disclaimer at the end. It was like, this is probably just a dream or something like that.
Right.
So,
right.
That's the only explanation I could come up with something for that, because it's like maybe he fell asleep in the car and dreamed this, and later he remembers it as if it was true. But I don't know. That's just very strange. Makes you wonder, like maybe you can manifest shit with your mind somehow. Like maybe that's the
right.
If I was that guy, I would have bought them all like right then and there. So. Yeah, I'd be like, well, who the fuck knows if we'll come back this way again? Let's get him now. But very interesting. Any other ones here that I can hit you up with that might? No, I've already lost track. Now that was Jeremy who told the story, right?
Right.
You got it.
Oh, yes. All right. So Garrett, you got a story you want to share that sticks out to you as, you know, either particularly perplexing or one of your favorites, or, you know, the kind you share when you go on a podcast and they ask for one of the weirder ones. So you got like a favorite one you got in your pocket here?
I'm trying to, you know, it's not one. I mean, I tell this story every time because the one that's my closest to home, because I moved to this small town outside of Seattle, and when I did, just like 2 years ago when the map got created, and Jeremy looked up monsters in my new town called Bremerton, and he found this story. So he found a story, and so I've been researching it, about a woman in the 40s who said she went in her basement here, and while she was down in the basement, she was doing the laundry, and she turned around, and behind her was this 6-foot orange shrimp thing that had like antenna and like all these hands, and it totally freaked her out. And she ran upstairs, and she moved back to Seattle like immediately. And she told this story in a Strange magazine, which I think was being published in the 90s. So it's not a story that someone submitted, but it's a story since I've moved here that I've like gone out looking for, like where, using the small details she left in this story, like what street did this happen on? And I think I found her daughter, who's in her 80s and still living in Seattle. So I actually wrote a letter in the mail to her and said, did your mom ever see a giant shrimp? But it's just like it's so strange, you know. And here in Bremerton, I've kind of taken, you know, I have a giant shrimp costume that I wear around, and I'm known as like the shrimp guy. I'm trying to get the town to like make it our mascot. But
you're really committed.
I know, totally. I just love it because it's like it kind of represents like I think what Jeremy and I are interested in, kind of like a whimsical like, you know, really bizarre stories. We, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, we're actually particularly interested in stuff outside of just ghosts and UFOs or something. It can be really anything. So.
Do you get a lot of little creature sightings?
Little creatures?
Yeah, you know, like elf type. I know Kiki submitted one, but anything other than Kiki's gnome?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of ferries. Let me see here. You know, I'm going to search for it. Oh, there's one. This is. I sure like this one. It says a ghost. Oh, the entire report. This is totally off subject, but I just saw it. I wanted to mention it. There's a ghost report from England, and all the entire report is this ghost looked like Amy Winehouse. That's the entire report. The Amy Winehouse ghost.
Yeah, you
have one on there. I forget where it went now, but it was like a fucking Elvis sighting, and the guy was like, "I was on mushrooms."
Yeah, that's true. But that's okay. You know, we're willing to entertain. We're willing to entertain stories that are submitted, you know, by people who are experiencing other
altered states. Yeah.
Non-consensual.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Here I go. I found it here now.
I mean, you know.
I was walking around Boulder very late one night with two dear friends in college. We were on LSD. We saw Elvis. He was huge, overweight, and old, sitting in a red lawn chair on a red porch that had a red light. There was a red cooler next to him on the porch. He saw us looking and waved. I think we waved back before traveling on. So, I guess you could classify that as an Elvis sighting, folks. So, pretty wild.
I believe so. Yep, Boulder, Colorado.
Well, he went somewhere that he didn't want people to know where he was. Makes sense.
Yeah, we've got, you know, I'm not saying it's hard to say, like, we don't really have, like, you know, little people, fairies, fae, but we have stories of, like, entities that sort of behave within that sort of realm of the phenomenon.
Yeah.
And, you know, experiences that I might classify that way if I was, so there's this one, let's see, this is from Indiana, from Indianapolis, August 2018. And it says, we were on the back porch watching the fireflies, and my partner nudged me and pointed into our neighbor's yard. We both saw the fireflies grouped into a tall humanoid shape, taller than a chair.
Yes.
And it slowly walked across the lawn and stepped over the fence into our yard. We felt weird and unsettled by it and went inside before it got any closer. So to me, that's like, okay, this is an entity that doesn't fit within, like, the normal paradigm that I might, you know, no UFO entity or, like, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, or ghost, you know. So I would, to me, that's like, well, this is, like, fairy or fae-related. Possibly,
yeah.
But I don't know. You know, I also don't want to make any judgment calls on it because I don't know a damn thing.
That's definitely what you. That's what I was gonna say. It's like that's kind of the things you're looking for is like the stuff that doesn't even fit. You know, it doesn't really fit the paradigm. Because I mean, I guess it's cool if you've seen a Bigfoot, but if it's like, yeah, I was in the woods and a Bigfoot ran by, it's like, because it's not. That's just a Bigfoot sighting. These are like a little more colorful. Anecdotes. Have you, now you guys are up there in the Pacific Northwest, have you ever had any Bigfoot experiences?
Well Jeremy and
personally,
I don't
mean,
camp, so.
Alright.
We're not big campers, so.
That's true.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have not seen a Bigfoot. Personally.
Alright. Yeah, I'm not a big camper either.
No, I'm a glamper. if there's not a chandelier in my yurt, then I'm not interested. I have had a cryptid experience that's not on the map back in Florida. Consider this an exclusive story.
Nice. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I haven't added it to the map yet. I still want to at some point. I just haven't gotten around to it. But this is back in St. Augustine. Some friends and I in high school, every weekend for, you know, a lot of the school year, I think it was like our junior year, we would go camping in these, like, it's basically like pine scrubs kind of up there because, you know, the ground is all sand, so pine trees do really well there and palmettos and stuff. And so it was next to a suburb, like a development, like a very standard, like, grid layout, houses all look the same suburb. And then there were these woods, and there were plans to expand the suburb, that neighborhood, into, like, it was their next phase or something. So
yeah.
all these woods were like crisscrossed with what would eventually be the roads. They were just like clear cut roads. So you're surrounded by the woods, but then you had like this grid of paths that you could walk into, and it still feel like being in the middle of nowhere out in Florida. And then there were also fire trails cut. So there were smaller, I don't know if anybody's ever seen like a fire trail that, you know, is, when you're out in the woods, like it almost looks like an animal trail, but it was deliberately cut just to, if something caught fire, it wouldn't spread.
Okay.
And they do it in like North Florida, like when they're in the dry season, they'll just go out and do it like just in case. So long and short is there was this giant, basically like grid forest playground where we just kind of went out and like we would camp there. We would play capture the flag. We would just like run around and, you know, try to scare each other. And so it was a lot of fun. And so one night we were camping there and we decided we would play capture the flag. And there were like, I don't know, 10 of us there at the moment at that time.
Yeah.
So I was on this, I was on a team with two other guys, and we decided we wanted to be clever and take our flag and hide it like way out in the middle of like these trails where nobody would find it. You know, it's pitch black.
Yeah.
There were fireflies, you know. So we found this. So we went around this corner and we found this old sort of abandoned truck. And we hit our flag in there, and then we just sort of crouched down, and we just were like, we're going to guard this. And then, you know, if nobody's found us in like half an hour, we're just going to go back to camp. So as we're standing there, we notice that there's this figure walking towards us. And it was hard to make out, you know, pitch black. So there's this figure walking towards us. Now, we also had a friend, one of our friends, and he was in the ROTC, and he was planning on going into the service. And he would always, like, wear full camo, like, with face paint and all everything and, like, jump out at people just, like,
yeah,
as, like, gosh, you know. So his nickname was Tree, because we'd be like, oh, it's Tree, you know. He was just hiding in the trees, so.
Yeah.
So we were sort of crouched down looking this way, and we see this sort of shadowy figure coming towards us. And, you know, one of my friends is like, oh, that's got to be Tree. Like, he blends in way too well. That's got to be Tree. He's like, playing a prank on us or something. So then as the figure gets closer, we start realizing that, you know, our friend Tree is like, I don't know, 6'1", 6'2". This thing was starting to look like it was getting like 7 to 8 feet tall.
Wow.
And it was starting, and it started to get towards us as though, almost as though it had seen us and was like sneaking up on us.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who it was, but one of us is like, that's not Tree. And as soon as one of us said, that's not Tree, the figure bent down onto all fours and leapt like a mountain lion into the woods off the side of the trail.
Jesus.
Just like, whoop. So we were freaked out. We were,
yeah,
like,
holy shit.
Like, you wouldn't believe. We were like, what the fuck were you? Plus, it was like right on the way back to the camp. Like, we had to walk by it to get back to camp. So, yeah, we walked by and we were like, you know, like, don't let it. We didn't look to the side or anything like that. And, yeah, it's easy to say that there was like a feeling of like darkness or fear when you're in a situation like that because, I mean, you're scared shitless, right? So,
yeah.
I'm not going to say it was like supernatural fear that we were feeling, but it was close to it. It was like very sort of dark. So, we get back to the campsite, and everybody else is there. There's not a single person still off in the woods hiding their flags. And we went in, and we were just like, oh, we got to tell you, we just had the weirdest experience. And, you know, one of the other guys was there. He's like, did you just hear all that screaming? And we were like, no, we didn't hear any screaming. They're like, we came back to the camp because we heard this horrifying screaming. And
Jesus.
We wanted to come right back to the camp as soon as we could. So That was it for the night for us. Like, that was, we basically just all stayed together, huddled around the fire, and did not go to sleep that night and got out. And then there were a couple of other interesting things that happened in that area. There was somebody who was parked nearby there who was out basically making out with his girlfriend in the dark, and something hit the hood of their car. And when they got out of the car, they looked to see, and it looked as though some thing with very, very large claws had hit the hood of their car and then, like, bounced back off into the woods.
Weird.
And then there was another experience that a friend of ours had in that same place. They went back during the day to see if they could find any evidence of, you know, what was going on back there. And, you know, in the middle of nowhere, this is probably, you know, a good mile or two outside of the suburb, they just started hearing wind chimes.
Oh, creepy.
Just, like, strange. And then they both realized that they looked down and they were both, they had both picked up big sticks and were holding them defensively without even realizing it. So they
looked
it out. So, yeah. So that was,
wow,
that was a series
Jesus.
Of high strangeness in St. Augustine that I got to experience.
Wow, those are all wild. Holy shit. Now, when the thing was coming towards you guys and you realized it was much bigger, did you notice any interesting smell? Because that's like what they all say. Oh, the Bigfoot smells. You know, it may not have been Bigfoot, but you know what I'm saying. Did you notice any out of the ordinary odor?
We didn't that night, but one of the nights that we went back, there was a definite odor. So
weird.
But, you know, with that in mind, this is also like primo skunk territory.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to say. It really is hard to say. But that was like, that was the one experience that I could definitely say that was some kind of cryptid or cryptoid or, but it was also like high weirdness. There was more to it than just the creature, you know, wind chimes and things.
Yeah,
like
yeah. Well, the jumping motion is very un-Bigfoot-like too. So it's like, sounds like at first it's like a Bigfoot, but then when it takes off, you almost think like, if they exist, like a dog man or something. You know what I'm saying? Like something that can, something that, I just don't, with all due respect to the Bigfoot, I just don't think that it can do sort of a jump like that. That's almost like a four-legged animal jump. It's a very interesting,
right?
Dynamic. Very weird. Wow.
Yeah. You hear it here first, folks.
Yeah, that was crazy. Wow, very interesting. I'm like still thinking about that now. Well, I guess, do you have any, I don't want to, like, keep, like, poking on the map here, but let me think about what kind of interesting other, do you have any other interesting sort of, like, time portal, time slip stories? Because those are always, like, similarly head-scratcher of a story. Do you have any of those that stand out to you beyond the root beer one that's particularly, you know, mind-blowing?
Garrett, do you have any off the top of your head that you can think of?
I can't think of any more. I'm trying to think of any of those kind.
Yeah, I kind of put you on the spot with that.
I was thinking Holly's story. This is not a time slip one, but Holly's story, what she found in her backyard. It's a good one,
I
think.
Oh, yeah. That's a great one, yeah.
All right, let's hear it. I actually have to go. I'm so sorry. I have family thing, but
okay, so
I think
everything
that's a
okay
good one. Oh yeah, totally.
All right,
but, I should actually move on, but Jeremy is gonna be amazing, so sorry.
All right.
I'll miss you.
All right, no worries, man.
Yeah,
I hope everything's
it's
okay. Yeah. It's that dog, isn't it? It's the dog. It was the dog that caused
the
problems,
man.
Isn't he?
It's the dog, man.
Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. You'll have to tell me sometime what I did to offend him now. Is he...
Actually, no, it's just, he's, you know, we're both dads, and, you know, he's got a six-year-old, and I have an eight-year-old, and so sometimes we just need to step away and...
All right. Well,
dads.
Garrett, thank you. Thanks for coming on the show, man, and, you know, be safe out there in Seattle.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you so much.
All right, no worries.
Later, G.
All right. Later, Garrett. All right. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, so...
All right. Yeah, tell me this story here, your friend's story there, Holly.
Yeah, sure. I'll tell you that. And then, you know, I'm also happy that there are a couple of time slip stories, too, that I can share. But I think Garrett's right. This story is really cool. So Holly is one of our ambassadors. She was one of our first ones. She's from Indiana. And this is one of her personal experiences. So September 15th, 2016, she says, when we moved into the house, my husband swore up and down that the place was haunted. I worked full-time, and he was a stay-at-home parent. He claimed he heard all kinds of weird pops, clicks, voices, and experienced things moving in the house while I was at work. After about a month, after we moved in, my husband unearthed an old headstone in the backyard while doing some cleanup. It was badly worn and difficult to read. However, when we propped it up on the porch, the evening sun hit it just right so that we could read the words on it. It said, Robert C. Wright, August something 1914, February 5th, 1917, at rest. Immediately, we were concerned that there was a child buried in our backyard, but some emails and phone calls made to the local historic society produced some death certificates that showed that the little boy was actually buried in an Oddfellows cemetery about an hour away over the state lines. I contacted the last living relative, now in her 80s, about it, and she had no idea why his stone was in our yard. The house was built by the husband of little Robert's older sister, however. About a week after we found the stone, my husband very clearly heard a child shout, help, move. He was a bit shaken up about it. We eventually returned Robert's stone to his cemetery, where his grave had remained unmarked next to his mother since his death. We hope this made him happy. Maybe this was the move the child ghost shouted about.
That's very weird. I wonder why that stone got moved like that.
Yeah, no idea. And if you go to the entry on the site, she actually sent in a couple of pictures. So you can see the head. You can actually see a family portrait with a picture of the little Robert in the front row of the family portrait. So, haunted headstone, if anybody wants to search to see the pictures.
Interesting. Haunted headstone.
Yeah.
Very creepy. That's a creepy one. Yeah. Now, what were you saying? You teased some time slip? I hope everything's all right with Garrett. I've never had anyone leave in the middle of a show like that. So I hope everything is okay.
Yeah. No, everything's totally fine. Yeah.
All right. So you got some time slip stories you were telling me about?
Yeah. I got some interesting ones. Actually, a couple that were just submitted. And so the thing I should also mention about the categories is we let people select multiple categories.
So if you have
a UFO sighting and it comes with, you know, the missing time, then, you know, you could click UFO and time distortion, and it will show up when you search for either one. And then if you go to the top of the site, up in the toolbar at the top of the site, there's something that says sightings with a drop-down menu. And you can actually sort the scaries by their sighting type that way. So if you go to sightings and then time distortions, you'll get all the time distortions, all the stories that are tagged time distortions that are on the map.
Right.
So this one was tagged time distortion, and this one I thought it's a recent one, but it, like this one I think is like creepy. It's like kind of Lovecraftian or something. Like, it's called The Church in the Woods. And this is in Nova Scotia. It says, as a child, I would bike down to the beach a lot, usually with friends. As I got older, I'd go by myself further down the road just to get out of the house and be alone. It was around this time that I started biking by the church. It was old, dark, and almost completely hidden by the trees. But if I biked by at night, the windows would always be lit. One evening, I went out to bike feeling angry and tired and frustrated. And I drove down the shore road. When I passed the church, I could see the door was open, and there was a figure standing there, completely silhouetted by the light coming from within. I felt almost compelled to enter. I remember getting off my bike and started to walk up. The rest is a blur. I don't know if I entered the church, but I feel like if I had, I wouldn't be telling this story. I know I made it home before midnight, and I stopped biking down the shore road after that. Last year, I asked my mom about the church. She doesn't remember ever seeing it.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?